This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone.
I actually like quite a fan of that intro music.
I've had a few people be like, what is that intro music?
Yeah.
And I'm like, where'd you find it? It was just on that.
There's kind of like a list that they send out and then you just select one because it's not copyright. But yeah.
I wish it didn't have my voice over it.
Yeah,
but
I guess
if you're listening to this, you're hearing a lot of my voice. So
that's true.
That's just the only time I have to hear it back.
It's like, yeah, you always sound different when you hear yourself recorded, eh?
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, today we are talking about authors who have also written poetry collections, either one or several, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or are known as a poet. In your case, I know you're talking about one person that's...
Yeah, it's a few different. There's a few that when I looked into this to be like, oh, who have I read recently that's also a poet? And I was like, heaps of them.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense. It kind of goes hand in hand of...
Yeah, it's kind of like, do they go from poetry writing to then writing prose or vice versa? I find that kind of... I don't think... You get many prose writers that then go, oh, I've actually got a poetry collection.
Yeah, it seemed more that poetry writers then turn to writing fiction.
Yeah. So who are you going to talk
about? So my first book is, I just finished it this morning. It's called Martyr by Kaveh Akbar, and I loved it. I think it's my favourite book I've read this year.
Oh.
Closely tied with The Safe Keep. It completely, captivated me. It's just like my perfect book, really.
Amazing. I'm familiar with him from his poetry.
Yeah, I hadn't read any of his poetry, but now I have to. I need to read everything you've ever written.
Yeah.
He's an Iranian-American poet who has previously published two poetry collections, I believe.
A Wolf at the Door or something?
Yeah, Calling a Wolf a Wolf.
There he is.
And one called Pilgrim Bell. He's won a whole bunch of awards, and I definitely can see why after reading this novel. His grasp of language is pretty breathtaking. It's just one of those books where you're just like reading and like every sentence is beautiful, like has some, just like hits you. I was reading it this morning and I just like, which happens to me occasionally when I'm like reading something or like listening to music, where you're just like kind of hit with how beautiful the art is and like, get that, get emotional about how much I'm getting out of something.
Yeah, or like, because it's so, the putting, knitting words together can, which I'm too badly to say, but it's just such an incredible power. I think it's like casting a spell.
Definitely. I felt like a spell was cast on me. I was like crying about like, the books obviously got me emotionally, but I was also just like, wow, this is so good. I'm like feeling so many things. Yeah. I think Martyr came out last year. I remember it was a really big deal when it came out, but I kind of missed that first train. It follows a recently sober poet, Cyrus Shams, as he begins a project focusing on what it means to die a death of meaning and value. And he becomes obsessed with the notion that his death has to be significant. So when he finds out that a mysterious and terminally ill artist's final piece involves her sitting in a Brooklyn art museum talking with guests about death before she dies, he gets on a plane with his best friend Z to speak with her. He's also a recovering addict, so a lot of the book deals with that. The plot is hard to describe. That's what happens, but the way he writes it is so meandering is not the right word, but there's like so many different tangents. You hear all these different points of view, like his mother who died when he was a baby. She was on a plane that the American military shot out of the sky, which is actually a true story. It's a passenger plane that they mistook for fighter jet. So and just like completely obliterated this Iranian passenger plane. And then he and his father moved to America and he's raised there.
Okay. So like real, so he's pulling from real life then?
Yeah, this is, that's what happens in the book. I don't know. I think, I'm not sure where he was born, but he's, yeah.
He is a recovered addict, because yeah, one of his collections speaks to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, you can tell it in the book. There's a lot of, okay. The way he writes about addiction and recovery is pretty beautiful and
cool,
like resonant, I suppose. But you get all these different, like, you get his mother's point of view, his father's point of view from, like, various parts of their life. And then he has these, like, he has insomnia. So a thing he's done, he's done his whole life to help him fall asleep, is he creates these, like, elaborate sort of dreams where it's people from his life or, like, famous figures talking to each other in his dream. So that, that's, you get these chapters that are like that. So it's like, his mother talking to who's one of the people? Lisa Simpson. That's one of the conversations.
Amazing.
And like the artist he meets, I think it's her, talking to the president, who is like a pretty thinly veiled Trump. And it's just, I really loved just like all the little interludes. I read some like reviews of it where a lot of people didn't like that, but this, to me, that's like my perfect book. I love a fiction that has all these different sort of things crammed in, and like there are a lot going on, but in the end it all comes together in a really beautiful way. And yeah, speaking to how he is a poet first, you can really tell in this book, like his grasp of the language is so beautiful, and like the way he crafts a sentence, and you just read it and like takes your breath away. I really loved this book so much, and I can already tell I want to read it again like immediately.
Yeah.
So cool. Highly recommend.
Been on my list to read because just being familiar with his poetry work, and I see he does quite a lot with my old tutor and Jack Underwood.
Yeah.
Like readings together, even though he's based in America and Jack's in London.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, so it's.
Yeah, very excited to read his poetry.
Yeah, I can lend you the book. I've got it at home.
Oh, yeah.
I actually got it at the Regent Book Fair.
Oh, good score.
It's like amazing.
Yeah, a really beautiful book about life and death and art and meaning of life.
But is it, do you think it would be approachable for people who don't, like, is it quite full of imagery and that sort of thing? Like, it seems quite imaginative.
Yeah, I think it would be approachable for most people. I think, the way it's written might put some people off of, like, bouncing between point of views. But I think I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a book you kind of have to read to know if you'll like it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't find that, like, his imagery was, like, taking over or anything. You still really deeply connect to the characters.
Okay.
But, yeah. Cool. Highly recommend.
So that's?
That's Marta with an exclamation point by Kaveh Akbar.
Awesome. Yeah, so I've been reading Han Kang's The Vegetarian, which actually was published in 2007. And so just to tell you a little bit about her, she's from South Korea, and she taught creative writing at the Seoul Institute of Arts. And yeah, so this novel, The Vegetarian, won the International Booker Prize in 2006. I think I've got here, but I'm not sure that's quite right. I thought it was 2007.
Oh, what's
that? So it's been re-released.
Yeah.
So she's the first Asian woman and Korean to be the recipient of the Nobel Prize in Literature, and she received that last year. So that's pretty cool. And she comes from a family of writers. So her father and both her brothers are also writers. She's quite an interesting person. Like, she published a book called A Song to Sing Calmly, and then it was accompanied by music, like an album, and she didn't intend to sing, but the music director insisted that she was the one singing it. So I had a look on YouTube, and there's like this album of her singing. It's quite interesting.
I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, it's kind of hauntingly strange and beautiful and just like weird.
I would imagine that from what I've read of her fiction.
Exactly. So scrolling through my notes here. Yes, so she wrote a poetry book I'm not sure what year she wrote that, but it's called I Put Everything in a Drawer, which I think is
a great,
beautiful name, but it hasn't been translated into English, sadly, so I couldn't engage with that. But I was quite surprised to find that out. But she wrote that quite a few years ago, and she's got about 11 novels under her wing. So The Vegetarian begins with, it's in three parts, basically, and the first part is, I'm used to going off bits of paper, and I've brought my computer in today because I'm allergic to the printer and it just doesn't want to print for me.
That's different reading off a screen.
It is, especially when you've like made it really, really big and can't find the place. Actually, I'll just start from the start where my notes start. How about that? So yeah, it begins with this description from the husband about why he chose his wife. Her name is Young Hai. I think I'm saying that correctly. And, you know, he's saying that she's like agreeable and he wasn't even attractive to her, and she didn't kind of invoke any kind of reaction from him. So he was like, oh yeah, she'll be like a perfect submissive wife kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then one day she decides to become vegetarian and he's just like, why are you doing this to me? So it's all written from his perspective. And yeah, it's quite wonderful. And then they go for dinner and like with his boss, and she's not even wearing a bra, and he's just like mortified. And then it kind of escalates. So he lets her family know that she's not eating and she's losing a lot of weight. Like she's barely eating anything. And then that sort of invokes this quite violent response from her family, and everything starts to unravel from that. And yeah, it's quite shocking. And then the second act is from her brother-in-law's perspective, and he takes a sort of sudden interest in her. He's an artist. And I won't talk too much about that. And then the third part is the perspective from her sister, so the brother-in-law's wife. And yeah, it's quite intense. Like, I was just finishing it this morning and just, yeah. But it's really, so it's been described as kind of a Kafkaesque type book. And it's, yeah, says it's a powerful tale of aggressions aimed at those who step outside the social norms and the misogynistic assumptions that impose subservient and suppression, and it makes for a truly unforgettable read. So it's kind of like, yeah, these characters, well, basically Young Hai, the main character, acting out and everyone just freaking out about that. Yeah, it's a really interesting book, and it's sort of like a novella sized, as a kind of, if I was to write a novel, I'd want to write in this way. I think it kind of invokes you to, well, invites you to think a bit bigger about life. It's not just the action that's happening within the story.
Yeah, I've read it quite a few years ago now. I remember being quite affected by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of upsetting.
It is upsetting. It's gross.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that about it. I love books like that. It's like,
yeah.
Sayaka Murata and a lot of like female Asian writers write books like that really well.
Yeah.
I guess because it's a pretty restrictive society.
Yeah, and they're kind of, the females in the book are just sort of, you know, there to serve in a sense. I think it's kind of, yeah, the narration being from, it's never in Young Hai's point of view, so that kind of brings that back to that, yeah, she's just a character.
Yeah.
She's not her own person. Like you there is like these little sequences in the first part where it talks about her dreams, because she becomes a vegetarian because of a dream, which, yeah, she gets a lot of grief around. But, yeah, I definitely recommend it. And, yeah, it's a beautiful book. And it has, yeah, made people wonder why there isn't more Korean novelists being sought out and then translated into English. Well, South Korean, obviously. But yeah, that's The Vegetarian by Han Kang.
I think it's the only one of her books I've read, but I want to read more of.
Yeah, I guess
I've heard The We Do Not Part, which I think is her latest one.
Yeah, that came out.
It was
last
really good,
year, didn't it?
Yeah, there's also a really, really funny review of The Vegetarian on Goodreads by a man, where he's like, I really love this book, and as it's really connected to me as a vegan. And it's just quite a long review of him just like completely missing the point of the novel. So that was a fun read if you go to Goodreads. I think it's the top comment because it's obviously got a lot of hate on it.
Amazing.
If you want a laugh of an oblivious man, go there.
That's quite bizarre. Yeah, I think it has been misinterpreted by people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I can see how he got there, but it's just kind of like, do a little bit of like critical thinking for once in your life, for God's sakes.
Well, if people aren't learning how to be critical thinkers.
Yeah.
What was your...
This one I read kind of a month ago maybe-ish, which I didn't realise was by someone who's also a poet. It's called Boulder by Eve Baltazar. She was born in Barcelona and is a Catalan author and poet who's published 10 volumes of poetry to wide acclaim in Spain. And
Translated into English?
I don't know if her poetry has been, maybe, but her three novels. This is book two in a triptych of novels. I haven't read the other two yet, but they're kind of like loosely interconnected. Are called Permafrost, Boulder, this book I'm talking about, and Mammoth. They're talking about women's interior lives. I think most of them are about queer women. And I need to read the other two now because I love this one a lot.
Is it the kind of thing you can read? You don't need to read them in order?
No. I don't know. It's like different people, I think. They're just like connected through the theme. And this Boulder was shortlisted for the International Booker Prize in 2023, continuing my streak of reading translated fiction that's been nominated for the Booker Prize.
I guess that's how you kind of get to it though, right?
Yeah, I think I remember hearing about this when it was nominated and then I didn't read it. And then I heard it was about a lesbian. I was like, okay, well, I guess I have to. It's also really beautifully translated by Julia Sanchez. It's just one of those ones where you're really in awe of the translator being able to convey the prose and meaning of the original text into English. Like, it must be so hard, like, especially a book like this where it is like a poem. I read an interview with the translator where she talked about the process, and she was like, I translated this book slowly, though I can't remember how long the entire process took, only that I spent a long while weighing each sentence, rewriting it, reading it aloud, as if the whole thing were a collection of poetry, which it is in a way. So yeah, I guess.
Interesting.
Speaks to the way it's written as a poem, as the author as a poet. This book sort of explores the complexities of motherhood and how it tips the scales between the roles of mother and lover. So it's focused on, you first meet the unnamed protagonist, who is a loner who's really content with moving from job to job. As she waits, she takes up a job as a cook on a merchant freighter, and she's pretty happy with the predictable routine she takes up while she's traversing the South American coast.
I've read this.
Have you?
Yeah.
Ah.
Something else like hold on. Wait, this is so familiar.
Then she meets Samsa, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who's a Scandinavian geologist, and they fall in love, and she decides to trade in her floaty lifestyle for a much more domestic arrangement in Reykjavik when Samsa gets a job. This is a good quote. It's like So this is the protagonist speaking. She doesn't like my name and gives me a new one. She says I'm like those large solitary rocks in southern Patagonia, pieces of world left over after creation, isolated and exposed to every element. No one knows where they came from. Not even they understand how they're still standing and why they never break down. So she gets the name Boulder from her partner. And then you sort of follow them as the years progress and sort of sees her making compromises and adjusting to this domestic life as a couple. But then the dynamic in their relationship shifts pretty dramatically when Samsa expresses her desire to have a child, which Boulder does not have any desire to have a child, but it's a journey she really doesn't want to embark upon. But yeah, there's a good... I'll do another quote. It seems unbelievable that a single decision, a... effing intangible thought, could so violently upset the flesh and bone scaffolding of daily life, the steady rhythm of the hours, the predictable material colour of the landscapes that gives us nourishment and company. The decision precedes a living thing that already exists and takes over everything. Its presence has dimension. It occupies the house with concrete tentacles and sinks into the skulls of the people who live there and clings to the fine membrane that sheathes their grave matter. And then it follows after the birth of their child and the gap that widens between them as Boulder sees Sums as sort of becoming this entirely new person that she doesn't really recognise anymore. And, yeah, leaves her feeling quite lost and lonely and in exile.
So they do have a kid.
They do have a kid, yeah.
Is that a spoiler?
I don't think so. I feel like it's on... I knew that going in. I'm not sure if that's because I'd already read reviews.
Yeah.
Okay, well, sorry. This pitch is a book about motherhood, I think.
Yeah,
is it not?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Boulder, who's a difficult and interesting main character to inhabit. And yeah, it's a pretty piercing look at the roles we play and the way they shape our lives in proximity to each other and ourselves. I thought it was pretty funny and dark little novel. It is quite short. It's only around 100 pages. So I was really impressed with the prose and how intricately crafted it is. I didn't feel like any words were wasted in this book.
So kind of like a poem in that way, like the whole economy of words.
Yeah. Definitely feel this in this novel.
Mm.
More than Marta, which is a bit more sprawling. But this one I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realise that she was a poet as well.
Yeah, 12 collections, so
quite a part.
Yeah. I really loved it. I loved the different take on motherhood, especially in queer relationships, and would recommend it. I am really excited to read the other two in the triptych.
Yeah, I've got really vague memories of it. I think what stood out for me was when she was working on the boat.
Yeah, the first bit is a lot happens, and it's only in about 15 pages. It's pretty impressive of just the writing. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Because does it become quite domestic?
They sort of settle into this domestic life, and then, the unmooring of everything when partner becomes a mother. Well, they both become mothers. I think it's described as she's into this cult or religion. Of motherhood
That's right. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I was thinking about other authors who were poets. Well, I suppose they still are a poet, and then I don't even know if I've talked about it on the show before, but A.K. Blackman. She's a really great poet and also has put together that poetry collection called Spells, an anthology.
Oh, that you talked about that one.
Yeah. But she wrote a book called The Glutton, which is really great. And it's about, set in medieval France, and the characters can eat anything.
Ooh.
And he's kind of a bit of a sideshow freak.
Yeah.
Gets kind of adopted in that way.
That sounds fun.
And it's kind of based on a real story as well, which is quite interesting. But I think she's written something else recently that's just been published. She kind of always does historical fiction.
Sounds very up my alley.
Yeah.
I love historical fiction.
I can lend it to you, actually.
Do you have it?
Yeah. It's one of those ones that I actually bought from, this website in the UK. That does free shipping, which is wild.
Really?
Yeah. All right. I won't say it on here. I mean, it's not Amazon. Let's just make that clear.
Yeah. No Amazon here.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of poets that, try their hand at doing prose.
Thinking, I was like, was Janet Frame a poet?
She's got
because you feel like you can feel that in her the stuff of hers that I've read, which isn't enough. I need to read way more Janet Frame.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read her. The last book she got published, that's kind of, I forget what the name is, but it's very much on her life when she gets the residency in the UK.
Yeah,
that apparently she didn't want to get published until after she had died because it was too close to. The character was too close to who she is, I suppose.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I guess, the Hawe Akva that he's writing himself into the book. I think people do that a lot anyway because you have to use real life experience and then just twist it a little bit, right?
Yeah. I think that makes, not to say that writers, I don't think they have to do this, but it does make for very compelling reading. I feel like it brings out a little more in
Yeah. It's like you do it close to the truth.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Oh, yeah, but just quickly before we run out of time, we've got two events coming up at the Athenaeum Library. One is put on by ORFM, who's the radio show you're listening to. So, yeah, it's their next cohort of Layers of Identity. It's a creative writing podcast project that they've put on for Dunedin youth, exploring whakapapa and, oh, my God, my computer just shut down, identity and belonging. So there's going to be a reading happening at the library on the 21st of August, which is a Thursday, between 4:30 and 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m. and you can RSVP to youthzone at or.org.nz. And then the next day, which is a Friday, the 22nd of August, is the National Poetry Day. And that's going to be on from 5 p.m. and there'll be more details to follow when that gets ironed out. But it should be a fantastic event. I'm actually reading in it.
Oh, exciting.
If you want to hear me stumble through some poems. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Cheers.
Bye. Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.